from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Wednesday. I'm going to warn you that today has a Monday vibe for me. Had a hard time getting out of bed. I was like, is it only Wednesday?
A Monday vibe. Yeah, you know. Now, are you saying that because of the sun, Ursula?
That probably, you mean the lack of the sun? Yeah. The clouds did change my mood a little bit, but I think there's more to it. So,
okay.
And I am one that I need to get more than 6 hours of sleep.
Okay, so I have a goal for today. I'm going to turn your Monday vibe and feeling into a Wednesday or Thursday vibe by the end of the show.
That sounds good.
All right. Hey, coming up at 9:33, he is the grandson of former Seattle mayor and governor, and now he is going to be running for mayor of Seattle. Art Langley will join us at 9:33 here on the G and Ursula Show. But right now, it is time for Ursula's Top 5 News Stories of the Day, brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
After she gave an impassioned speech last night, House Republicans still ousted Representative Liz Cheney from her post as the chamber's number 3 GOP leader. Today's voice vote was punishment for her repeated criticism of former President Trump and his false claims of election fraud and his role in fomenting the Capitol riot. Cheney says, unfortunately, this is where the Republican Party is today, but she's not giving up on it.
And I think that the party is in a place that we've got to bring it back from, and we've got to get back to a position where we are a party that can fight for conservative principles, that can fight for substance. We cannot be dragged backward by the very dangerous lies of a former president.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger supports Cheney and blasts his Republican colleagues who voted to demote her today, claiming that they want unity.
Look, I'm all for unity. I'm all for unity and truth. You know, truth cannot coexist with lies. Truth cannot coexist with falsehood. You cannot unify with that. And I think that's what Liz has been saying.
You know, Ursula, I love Liz Cheney's quote that she had today. And it was, we cannot both embrace the big lie and embrace the Constitution. And I don't know why this is. I text you guys this morning and I told you this. I was a little bit sad about what's going on with Liz Cheney. And then when the news came out, I was really sad about that. And why that is I never thought that we would get here. I thought on January 6th, when we saw what happened at the Capitol building, call me naive, but I really thought that that was going to be a time in which parties kind of united on something, because that was the potential of a civil war starting at that time right there. And so I'll just kind of keep it simple, Ursula, and I'll just say it is a very dangerous feeling that I have going forward in this country, because I really believe that we need the Republican Party to be strong, and a split like this and a split in a stronghold from Donald Trump, I just don't see how that is going to be a positive thing going forward.
I think this was totally expected. After January 6th, there were people who were refusing to even acknowledge that what happened at the Capitol was that big of a deal. I mean, you heard it. You heard people trying to deflect or say it really wasn't as big of this insurrection. They even challenged the use of that word. And they also challenge the former president's role in that, what happened on January 6th. So I'm not surprised by what happened. Liz Cheney's not surprised. Adam Kinzinger's not surprised. But what I think, I mean, I don't think anyone's surprised. What I do think needs to happen, though, is maybe consider not just being a two-party system. Maybe it's time to acknowledge that many people have outgrown the two-party system. Not everyone fits into one category or the other. Many other countries have gone this direction. The biggest thing for me, though, is that we have a crisis in truth. We cannot agree on what the truth is. And how do you come back from that? And I am incredibly proud of Liz Cheney that she has put country over party. Or Adam Kinzinger, who said absolutely in that quote when he said, how can you have unity when it's based on a lie? And so I still have hope. I'm not depressed. I'm not looking at this going, okay, you know, we're doomed as a country. I'm looking at it as they've exposed the issue now. Maybe now it's time for a change. What worked 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, 100 years ago is not working today. And moving forward, we need to continue calling out when there are lies and continue supporting people who are willing to take a strong stance, even at the risk of losing their position like Liz Cheney did. So as of today, Governor Jay Inslee is now at his lowest approval rating since before the pandemic. King 5 polled 650 adults, and among registered voters, 48% approve the job that Inslee is doing, as opposed to 36% who disapprove. And this is compared to back in January of 2020 when he scored a 41% approval rating. Inslee actually peaked at the beginning of the pandemic and through the summer, and now is down 12 points since last July. Is this a surprise?
No, it's not a surprise. I give him a C. And first, I want to say, and I always say this, I think initially, I think he did a great job. Overall, Governor Jay Inslee has done a great job when it comes to how he protected the state of Washington when it comes to COVID. I truly believe that. Now, I'm able to even appreciate the work that he's done and also call out some of the problems that I have had with some of the decisions. And one of those, and I think, Ursula, we're on the same page with this, and most of us are, is what happened with ESD. That was terrible.
Disaster.
Disaster. And still to this day, I feel like there's really nobody's really came out and really talked and made us, as the state of Washington, nobody really apologized for that. Nobody has been held accountable for that either. And then I think that this here recently, I think the move in Target, the explanation on the opening and pausing and all this stuff, I think that has been inconsistent in my opinion. I'm going to give him a C. Totally understand why his approval rating kind of dropped.
I'm surprised it actually hasn't dropped more, because if you look at it, he was at, he scored a 41% approval rating in January of 2020. Mm-hmm. And then now, he's 48% are actually approving of the job that he's doing right now. Is that right? So it sounds like it really hasn't dropped. But there are more people who disapprove. And I think it is, as you go along, just like you said, with the pandemic and the decisions. Now you've got leaders in Pierce County from both parties who are criticizing his move to get Pierce County back to phase two. It's gone on so long. I don't think that he's necessarily listening to both parties when he makes the decisions that he does. So people feel unheard. But I'm surprised that it actually isn't worse. Police in Tacoma are looking for an armed man who stabbed the owner of a convenience store and his son, too, earlier this week when they told this guy that he needed to wear a mask.
I told him again, sir, you got to have your mask on. We can't serve you. And then as I was escorting him out, he was getting upset as he was walking out.
Jim Hunt tells Cairo 7 TV the man stabbed him in the stomach first and then attacked his father.
My dad jumped on the guy, and then the guy started stabbing my dad multiple times. And the crazy thing is he just walked away after that as nothing happened.
Hun is back at work today. It's going to take his father a longer time to recover. I do want to point out that the community has rallied behind this family, and they have raised over $25,000 to help with their expenses.
Stabbed because you were told to wear a mask. I am glad that every single day that I turn this microphone on, that every single day that nobody listens to what I have to say and would be empowered to do something in that way. I'm proud to be able to do this on a daily basis. Number two, Ursula, this is kind of going back what you were saying. There is this attack on the truth that's going on. But in this case, even if you don't believe in the mask, even if you don't, you're someone like, oh, the masks are dumb and all that. Okay, that's fine. I'm not going to argue that point. But you stabbing somebody because you go into someone's business and they ask you to wear a mask, that's where it's heartbreaking, Ursula.
Well, and just to piggyback on what you were saying, how often do we get emails from people saying and getting really angry with us that they say we are pushing propaganda, we're pushing vaccines, we're pushing this idea of mask wearing? If you don't like someone wearing a mask, if you don't want to wear a mask, don't go to that business. But this idea, too, if you have a platform and you are shaming people because they choose to wear a mask and, oh, and now everyone's a sheep, just mind your own business. I mean, if they want to wear a mask even though they're vaccinated, let them do that. Like, what's the point? But in this case, because we've made it such a political thing, I think people are feeling empowered. Like, hey, you know, you don't have the right to tell me what to do, even though it is your business and that is your rule. I'm going to do what I want. And if I, you know, don't get to do what I want, I'm going to attack you. We got to do better. King County is now buying a hotel in Seattle's Uptown neighborhood to house the homeless.
Purchasing existing buildings means we can get housing ready that much quicker. Setting up partnerships with our 39 cities in King County and working with community-based organizations to make this effort successful.
That is Executive Dow Constantine in a video that has some annoying music on it. Sorry about that. He says the county is going to be looking to purchase more of these hotels to provide housing for up to 1,600 people who are chronically homeless. Do you like this idea?
I like the idea, yes. Do I like the idea? I'm just...
Well, what was the grunt for? What was the groan?
I think the groan is in the future, this is what we're always... It's going to be the idea. It is going to be dressed with music like you just heard in little videos, and it sounds good. But the execution of these things are the something that I really am going to question, considering the additional homeless folks that we're going to have in the future after this pandemic, after the moratorium is up, after people can't afford housing, after people don't have a livable wage.
So you should like factors. With all those reasons you just said, you should like the idea that there is going to be a place for them to go.
You know, Ursula, when do I have to be like, let's just say today I turn this microphone off, Ursula, and I say, you know what? I want to be homeless because I don't feel like working and I don't want to do anything and I just want to be done. Is there enough room in here in Seattle, in Tacoma, wherever, to be able to house all of us properly? Is there enough room?
No, but what you just described is not what most of these people are going to be using these hotels and these shelters. That's who's not their story. It's not like someone just decides. If you were to decide to give up your job right now and you want to be homeless, I think that you would take a while before you got to that point. So these are people who are chronically homeless. And how often do we complain over and over and over again about the people who are living on the streets, or people who are living in parks, or people who are allowed to stay there? I am totally in favor of these hotels if you can give them wraparound services. If it's not just, you know, here's the welcome mat, everyone come to Seattle because you're going to be put up in a nice hotel. No, you've got to do the work to try to get better and to get out on your own. But what's not okay is to keep them out on the streets, keep them in the parks, keep them, you know, next to schools, which we've been talking about ad nauseum. So here is a possibility. And there is a UW study that proved that doing this, which they did with three different hotels during the pandemic, apparently it was successful. People had a place to call home. They were safer from COVID. They saw improvements in their own physical and mental health. And because they had their own rooms, they were able to focus on things like getting a job or a place of their own. It sounds like a win-win. There's empty buildings right now in downtown Seattle, and you can put some people in there.
You did, but you did say this is a good idea if, right? You said the part about if,
yes,
the
so
wraparound
can,
services.
Yes.
And so that's where I'm at.
And that's what
I'm
planning.
And that's what I want to see, right? And I guess I'll sum it up by saying this. Ursula, my wedding photos were better than my marriage. How about that? Looked good. The execution just was terrible.
Mm-hmm. I lost you on that one.
Maybe I lost you on that one. I was on to something, but go ahead.
You're saying don't just do window dressing. Make sure that there's something to it. Right?
And that's what the grunt you heard from me is like. You even said something about the music. The music sounded good, and all the display. Just... Let's see the execution.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so many of us are staying home during the pandemic. That has kept a lot of drivers off the roads, and the lack of commuters means less money for the state, and now that's going to mean some of your commutes are going to be more expensive.
It's not all bouncing back in 2021. We're hopeful by 2023 we're close, but we're still off the mark.
The State Transportation Commission says tolls on 520 will likely go up by 15% in 2021. It could cost you another quarter to cross the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. That would happen sooner. And then State Route 99 tunnel commuters in Seattle, you could either be paying higher tolls, like up to 15% higher, or get a straight 25-cent increase for each trip. My question is, you want to pay more to drive, or you want to just stay home forever?
Okay. Well, we can stay home forever, but yesterday, I don't think we got to it. We're talking about an increase in utilities by 2026. There's an increase in every single thing that we do. Every news story we talk about, pay more here, pay more there. So in this case, Ursula, I'd rather just stay at home.
You can use that as your argument. I think a lot of people are going to be choosing to
stay
that
at home
too.
Yes.
Okay, still ahead, there is yet another candidate who has jumped into the race for Seattle mayor, and his name might sound familiar to you old-timers, but this guy is a non-politician. His background's in business. We're going to be talking to him next. You are listening to the Gian Ursula Show. Welcome back to the Gian Ursula Show. Don't get confused. It is a Wednesday. And as you know, the list of candidates for Seattle mayor keeps growing, and we now have a new candidate.
I never intended to run for mayor, but the number of Seattleites frustrated with the recycled list of mayoral candidates and direction our city is going has caught my attention, because I feel the same. I've lived here all my life. I'm an independent. I've supported candidates on all sides. I come to this campaign with no special interests except to bring back what pride I know is here and just waiting for us to wake up and restore a city in decline.
That is part of Art Langley's announcement that he's running. If his name sounds familiar, it's because his grandfather, Arthur Langley, was mayor from 1938 to 1941 and then went on to serve three terms as Washington governor. And Art Langley joins us now on the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Art.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. So your grandfather was in politics, but you were touting yourself as not being from the political class. Why do you think that is an advantage when running for this position?
Well, I think we've had a lot of folks that have entered these races over the last 15 years or so that really have not had a ton of experience working in the business world or you know, on the ground in Seattle in general, outside of the political world. And I think that we need more of that from folks that have worked in business and philanthropy and other things that aren't necessarily political from the get-go.
Homelessness is a very complex subject here in the Seattle area, and it's something that we talk about on a daily basis. Give us your thoughts on how you have seen homelessness addressed here in Seattle.
Well, there's been a kind of a mishmash of efforts, I think, by a whole lot of different groups that are involved and are all well-intentioned. And I think some of them have been very effective, some of them maybe not as much, but we don't really know that because we don't have a great list of who's done what. I having worked in with Salvation Army for the last 20 years, or actually most of my life, but I've been on the board for the last 20 years, I can speak more knowledgeably about what they've been doing. And we have a couple of great programs that we've been using. And in fact, I assisted in opening up a shelter in January, the newest one down in SoTo, which is housing 330 people now, which is that's our capacity, and we're trying to house all of those. And it's a different model than what we've been doing. So much of what you've seen in the past is congregate sheltering, where it's just a cot in a row. And we're finding that folks that have been living on the street are uncomfortable in that environment, which we all would understand. And so in this case, we made personal spaces with pipe and drape and gave them their own space with a bed and a chair and place for their things, as well as a locking box that allows them to keep their stuff safe, which is something that we haven't seen in the past, but obviously a huge problem for people that are living outdoors. So I think we need to look at really new ways of doing this. We really need everybody to be housed in some manner. And I've got a plan to make personal housing available for people fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, get them the services that they need, because in talking with other social service organizations, really the message is clear. There is a giant mental health and addiction problem on the streets. And, you know, the evidence is all around us. I'm sure I know that you guys talk about this all the time. And I think we all talk about it amongst our friends and other folks that we speak with, that we've got to be able to provide those services. And the good news is in Seattle, we have great healthcare and we have great institutions that are able to ramp up with some partnerships that I think we need to expand. University of Washington Medicine is a great institution, and I think that we ought to be tapping more of the mental health element there and finding the best and the brightest to help us with that. And then also to, you know, provide the other wraparound services that people need in order to kind of get a new trajectory on their lives.
What is your position on, you said you want everybody to be housed. What is your position on the tents that are out just about, and I also live in Seattle, so they are really popping up in places where you normally wouldn't have seen them in the past. What is your position, whether it's in parks,
right,
in schools, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, yes, and I live out near Broadview Elementary, and that's a significant concern to me, obviously, and I think probably to everybody. There's, you know, they've had one lockdown, I think, in the last 2 weeks because somebody in the tent camp there had a gun, albeit a pellet gun. Nonetheless, I think those are all dangers. And I don't think it's appropriate for people to be living in parks. I frankly don't think it's compassionate. I think that we need to do a better job of treating this problem. And we've got to get them into somewhere that's, you know, a better environment to recover. So I would propose getting these triage centers set up. And I think the city and the county both have some land that we can set these up to make some clusters of personal homes, which we have a local company that uses terrific, giving opportunities to work to folks that have been on the street before and are now kind of redirected their lives, and also people coming out of incarceration. And they make a great product that I think is being used all over the country, not as much in Seattle, ironically, but has been used in Los Angeles, for instance, extensively. And this gives somebody a safe and secure environment, and then we can start to treat what issues are barring them from other successes. And so I am not in favor of allowing, you know, tents and people living in the parks. I frankly think that, you know, there's nothing humane about letting somebody live in 6 inches of mud in the middle of our Northwest winters, which are full of water, and temperatures that aren't conducive to success. And then, you know, even by Seattle's count alone, I think the cleanup last week was somewhere near 7,000 needles. And it's just, you know, that kind of stuff is not a healthy environment for anybody. And I think we need to be more compassionate. I think Seattle truly is a compassionate city, and we need to direct it in a manner that shows that, because living on the street the way we are currently, allowing this to go on is not compassionate.
This is the voice of Art Langley as he is announcing his run for mayor of Seattle as he joins the G and Ursula show. Art, SPD, Seattle Police Department, There has been, we've known that there are police officers that are leaving. There are police officers that have talked about not feeling the support from city leadership. What are your thoughts about that when you hear and know about that topic?
Yeah, that's an unfortunate, very toxic environment right now. And, you know, the defund the police discussion, I think, is inappropriate. I believe that the police are an important part of our community. I think that there are definite things that need to happen there as far as, you know, expanding methods and de-escalation training and reorganize some of the services. There's no question, but there have been a lot of injustices around the country. And that, you know, we need to keep an eye on all of those in Seattle. But as we end the year 2021, we will probably fall below 1,000 officers in Seattle, which is a dangerous place to be, I think, because there are still criminals. And unfortunately, that is expanding in Seattle. You're seeing our crime rates go up in most of the categories. And, you know, I think last month there were 28 officers that left. There's probably an equal number again here shortly. I think we're going to find that we will be, as I say, under 1,000 at the end of the year. And if you look at comparable cities like Boston and Baltimore, which are both a little bit smaller than us, currently I think they both have 2,050 police officers. By having less police, it stresses the system and causes a lot of these problems. You're seeing the response time has gone up dramatically for emergency calls. And, you know, You can find out pretty easily from the police how many people are available. And I think Adrian Diaz has pointed out that they're concerned about their ability to respond yes. to a significant problem.
Okay, Art, we are out of time, but I want to ask one quick question because, you know, it is a crowded race. The Seattle mayor's position is officially nonpartisan, but no one would feel like it is that way. I mean, we are a very left-leaning city. And many people feel like the city council has gone extreme left. Where do you put yourself in terms of your politics? If you wanted to describe yourself, how would you describe your, I know your grandfather was Republican.
Right. And he was Republican at a different time. You know, his style of Republican was more of the you know, Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Eisenhower type Republican, and Dan Evans for that matter, which in the Northwest was pretty middle of the road. And, you know, I'm pretty middle of the road myself, and I would consider myself, you know, aggressively moderate. So, you know, I'm looking for solutions, not for a political fight. And I think that the important thing is that Seattle has changed a lot over the years, probably over the last 15 years or so. We used to be a town where we came together to come up with solutions to these big problems. We've had a long history of doing so with big initiatives that we've had here. But the difference is that it used to be a team sport. We gathered together to come up with solutions rather than pick a side and fight it out. We stopped doing that. And in order to get back to where we're a city where we are here to provide services to the people that live here, we need to just start working together in order to accomplish these goals and not be such a, you know, political fighting machine, which seems like a daily basis here. They're, you know, that's not what a city does. A city provides service to the people that live here. And we're not seeing that in potholes in the street. We're not seeing it in our bridges are in terrible shape and they've been ignored for a really long time. And those are the fundamental elements that the city does.
Yep.
And we've got to be there to do that. And we have to reinvigorate our business community, too. Downtown really needs to be vibrant again. And there's
Absolutely.
A lot of ways to do that. But we're not paying attention to that.
Art Langley, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Coming up next in We Need to Talk, Colin Kaepernick has a book that he is a part of, and I'll tell you why I have a problem with the picture that's on the title. I'll explain that next. It's Gian Ursula. It is Gian Ursula. Happy Wednesday to everybody. Coming up at 10:06, we will have Michael Medved. He will join the show and we'll get his response and reaction to what happened with Liz Cheney today. But right now, Ursula, we need to talk. And what we need to talk about is I saw something last night, and I saw that Colin Kaepernick is part and he's backing a book that calls for the abolition of police in prisons. And basically, this self-titled publishing company will release its first title, Abolition for the People, the Movement for a Future Without Policing and Prisons. And Colin Kaepernick talked about, he doesn't really talk. He just gets on Twitter and then he kind of tweets everything. And so I keep continuing. I've been having this conversation, Ursula, with friends of mine, and I know some friends that, like, yes, and they're able to talk deep into the topic of why they want to abolish the police and how they want to look forward to a society without prisons and everything. And I want to say, Ursula, they make some great points, okay? They make some great points.
Well, what is one that has stayed with you that you think, okay, that's a great point?
I think the one thing that stays with me is the inability of real rehabilitation in prisons, right? Like, a lot of times when someone goes into prison, the way things have been designed and set up, there is a good chance that when that person comes out of prison, it's almost as if they were worse coming out than they were going in. And also, when they come out, you aren't allowed to rent an apartment. You can't do these things. You can't get a job. So it's almost like, man, well, let me go back to prison then, because life was better for me back then than it is out here. Okay, so those are some of the points. But I don't want to get deep into the weeds on that. Here's where I have a problem when you say things like abolish the police, or when you say things like defund the police, or when you say, you know what I mean? Like, these things that you guys are just throwing there, most people don't dig deep into these topics. Most people see these things. So a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old might say, oh, Colin Kaepernick says he wants to abolish the police. Okay, so that means police aren't good. Okay, let's get rid of the police. Right? So most people aren't able to talk through these topics, and that's why. So when Colin Kaepernick backs something like this and throws a tweet but never comes out in response, that is probably my biggest problem with Colin Kaepernick, is that he does not come out and talk. So for an example, I can get on Twitter and say some things, or Facebook and say some things, but there's a chance that I talk through things, and sometimes I'll come back the next day and I'll say things like, hey, Ursula, you know what? I was wrong about this, and here's why. Mm-hmm. So that's some of the problems that I have.
Well, a lot of times if you're retweeting something, or you're showing your support for something, or you're liking something, people are assuming, well, that means you believe in that, or if you put the hashtag on there. So many of these things, defund police, it's like a hashtag, and people jump on it, but without looking at, okay, so what are the consequences of that? I would argue that most of our city council jumped on that hashtag before really thinking it through.
Sure did.
So then you have to go backtracking instead of, and what it is just playing on the extremes. For Colin Kaepernick, I think it gives fuel to those people who say, well, the guy's, you know, a nut. He's an extremist. He's a radical leftist. And here's proof, because now he wants to abolish police and get rid of prisons.
Right.
And so that basically negates everything else that he was kneeling for, or that he was trying to raise, because, see, what did I tell you? He is, you know, XYZ. Instead of him saying, hey, you know, this would be something to look at. It doesn't make for a great tweet. But people are going to fill in the blanks and make assumptions.
When you see the cover of the book, there's a gal on the cover of it, and it says, abolish the police, close the prisons. That's the picture. And now, again, it's a complex topic, right? But it would be no different than there being a book that says, defund the police. Well, it's a little bit more to that, but unfortunately, people just grab the headline and just take that and they run with it. So that's why I have a problem with that being put out there. And Colin, you got to get on there and you got to talk about this stuff. Coming up next, we have Michael Medved joining us for three things that you need to know. This is Gene Ursula.